You're listening to Leadership Talks with Banning Leibscher, part of the Jesus Culture Podcast Network. Well, it's great to be back with you again on Leadership Talks with me, Banning Leibscher. Always, always enjoy just sitting down with any of you, wherever you may be. I think what I love most is the only reason you're listening to this podcast is because you have a passion to grow, and you're the one that raised your hand and said, Jesus, I want to change the world, use my life. And so he said yes, and so you get to grow. We've said this a lot, that a life of leadership is a life lived in over your head all the time, stretched beyond your capacity, always in over your head. And that's why I think we always have to have a passion to continue to grow. Excited to have our guest with us today, somebody that I consider to be a friend, love dearly, always enjoy whenever we get together and have buffalo burgers. That's kind of our random, this is like the only time I got a buffalo burger was with you. But
come on.
Great to have Brad Lomanick with us on the podcast. Thanks so much for jumping on and hanging out with us today.
Absolutely, man. Well, I think last time I was in your neck of the woods, we had some sushi or something felt a little bit more like cultured than buffalo burgers.
Not quite as manly. Hey, listen, I'd love to, I got a bunch of leadership questions. There's a handful of people that we talk to whose main thing is leadership. A lot of people are leading, but not necessarily have devoted their life to the concept of leadership, developing leaders, creating atmospheres for leaders to grow. You have. So I'm excited to talk to you about leadership. But for those that maybe don't know who you are, you were up front for a lot of years, but also you're a guy who's been behind the scenes making leaders better, making people look like geniuses, helping organizations. Tell us who you are.
Well, as you said, I mean, I've had some public and private expressions of seasons, and the most notable would be the public expression of Catalyst. That was, you know, my thing that I was stewarding for a decade plus, and there was other people that were involved in it in the early days, and I was around, and then I led it for a while, and then stepped away about 5 years ago now, just to let some other young leaders step up and allow me to do some other things, really to spend more time sort of in the shadows, as you said, and, you know, gathering a few leaders who were gathering thousands. So I kind of went from gathering the thousands to gathering the tens who gather the thousands and trying to be strategic with the tens in this season. And so a lot of my time right now is providing strategy and advice to organizations that are in the business of gathering leaders, or, you know, they may be trying to put on conferences or events or create a brand or create a movement. And I'm just trying to give some advice to a handful of people on how to do that well and try to hang out at that table of the conversation of leadership, which, you know, in the world of leadership, there's a lot of people, like you said, Banning, that act like they're experts, and they are very theoretical.
Yes.
So part of my challenge is always to make sure I've actually got one foot in the practical side and one foot, you know, hopefully in the thought leadership side. And, you know, my job is to build people and build into people who are building people. And I want to actually spend the rest of my life building platforms and helping create platforms that other people can stand on. You know, if somebody says, what are you doing, Brad? That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to use my leverage and expertise to help build the platforms that other people are going to leverage for kingdom impact and exponential sort of influence.
Talk to me a little bit about that. Being up in front, leading an organization like Catalyst, which is a well-known organization, you know, I would imagine most leaders in the body of Christ would be aware of Catalyst and what you're doing. As you transition from being on that kind of public stage to behind closed doors, you're behind closed doors helping other people be successful. Your name's not on it. What was that like? Has that been hard? Has that been fulfilling? Has that been a little of both? What's that transition been like?
Well, I was never really the personality that most people would have connected to Catalyst. I mean, people who were on the inside of it and speakers and talent and those who were partners, they knew me because we worked together a lot. But the average leader who showed up at a Catalyst event, if you said Brad Lomanick, you know, some of them might have known who I was, but it wasn't because I was the expert And that's just my personality. It's just my style. Like, there's nothing wrong with the movements that have a personality that is, they sort of connect the dots to.
Sure.
So the transition for me was not as hard, just because I was never really motivated by that or really pursuing it. And that was part of Catalyst. I mean, the beauty of Catalyst, I think, in many ways, was that when somebody said, "Who runs it?" a lot of people would go, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Like, isn't that Andy Stanley's thing, or isn't that John Maxwell's thing, or isn't it Gabe Lyons' thing, or isn't it Brad Lominick's thing? And so we were sort of mysterious on purpose. And we liked the fact that people weren't really sure, like, who was behind it. Because in some ways, we weren't trying to be anti-John Maxwell, and John was really our founder, but John built his platform of leadership based on he's the expert. And so we knew for the next generation, at the end of the day, like, they wanted to be part of something that was bigger than themselves. And it was bigger than one person.
How important do you think it is as a leader to invest in something that's not just building your thing? That makes sense. Like, we're serving others. That actually, this doesn't benefit my brand. This doesn't benefit my ministry. I'm purely doing this to serve. How important? Now you do that as a living, like, that's what you do. But for other leaders that maybe aren't doing it as a living, how important is it to keep that strategically in your life, that there are areas of your life that you're doing that aren't actually about you?
Well, I think it actually is a definition of true, or it's the answer to the question of what does significance look like. If somebody says, "What is significance?" Maxwell always told me this. John Maxwell said that success is about you, but significance is about others. We got a dog barking in the background. Sorry.
Okay, first of all, is that your dog? I love that.
Cujo is going crazy.
Okay, hold on a second. We're gonna leave this in because I love that you're home. We all got lives. I got dogs now that my daughter just walked by with a bunny, and we got dogs. But tell us your dog real quick, Cujo.
No, it's not. Cujo is the name that when it goes crazy.
Oh, what's your dog's name?
Her name is Bella. Bella, B-E-L-L-A.
Bella, what kind of dog?
It's got to be a lab, right? I mean, come on,
got to be a lab.
But you don't know this that I'm a hunter.
Oh, there you go.
Like, this dog is strategic in its life.
Yes,
it gathers ducks.
You have to have a retriever in the name. That's fantastic. I actually was on a podcast one time where I was doing a podcast with somebody, and I was the guest on it. I'm at my house, and a pool guy shows up. And for whatever reason, we have a golden retriever and we have a little mini Aussie. The mini Aussie, if somebody comes in our backyard, goes full on ballistic,
right.
Won't stop, can't get the dog to stop. Dog doesn't obey me anyways. And I had to go out in my car. I was sitting in my car in the driveway finishing the podcast because I couldn't find somewhere where the dog wouldn't go crazy.
The smallest dogs always have the biggest
part. Oh, just insane. Maxwell said,
yes.
Success, significance, go for that.
Yes. Success is about you. Significance is about others.
Wow.
So if you're not building into your equation of life, and especially of leadership, of any kind of influence you end up stewarding or have, you know, whether it's positional, whether it's just that you're now the expert, whether you're at the top of the food chain, part of your job then, once you sort of get to that place where you are able to make a difference beyond yourself, that's when it gets fun. The unfortunate thing is most of the time we never get to that place. Most of us don't, because we don't give ourselves permission, or we never get to where we feel like we have enough freedom,
right?
Or we have enough margin. And, you know, that's why margin's so important in life, is that margin actually gives you the room to respond and to make it about other people. Scheduling, you know, money, your responsibilities, like, margin in life actually gives you that room to make it about others. So I'm a big margin guy, man. Like, when people say, "Brad, I want to see your schedule," I'm like, "Well, it's pretty bare." And that's on purpose as a leader, is because I want my life at this season to be about being able to respond and invest in other people.
Yeah.
And the practical thing on that would simply be, I'll have people email me, probably just like you, and they'll email me and they'll say, "Hey, I know you're really busy, but do you have 5 minutes? I'd love to ask you a question. I'm trying to launch this new thing." And my answer is, yeah, I'm not actually that busy. Like, I have stuff going on, but I do have 5 minutes for you.
Yeah, I love that.
And that's a fun place to be as a leader.
Yeah. People, when people aren't there, when people say, Brad, I'm listening to this, I don't have margin, I feel overwhelmed, I don't have 5 minutes, or it doesn't feel like I have 5 minutes, what's your advice to them?
Well, the first thing is that you have to be really, really dialed in, whatever season of life you're in, to what is most important. Mm. For most of us, our lives are simply reactive to whatever is put in front of us. And this is, let me give you just one example as a leader, I think will help people. You know, think about the meetings you go to. And I love meetings. I'm not anti-meeting, but I don't do meetings unless it's intentional.
Right.
I don't do meetings. And a lot of us in organizational life, we just respond to meeting requests and go, oh yeah, sure. Like I'm good.
Yeah.
I got the whole day available. And intentionality is way more, I think, productive. So part of the thing you need to do if you're in that place is start being really, really intentional about your time, because that's the greatest asset you have, and get some of it back. Like if you're intentional about it, you'll be able to find margin daily. You'll be able to find margin hourly, actually.
Yeah, it's amazing. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. We have a lot of young leaders in our environment. So when it comes to them running their schedule, and it's something even for me that I'll do, he talks about in 7 Habits that, you know, you've got to know your role, and then you're trying to figure out what are you trying to accomplish in that role. So I remember, and then you set your weekly schedule up or your monthly schedule up based on that. So I'd sit down and be like, I'm a child of God. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a pastor. You just go down the list. And I just had there's just a young leader in our environment, overwhelmed by all, like, I just don't have time. They laid out all the roles, what they're trying to accomplish, put it on paper, and realized I have so much more time than I thought. Much more time. They're just not very intentional about it.
By the way, there's a great resource, a guy named Jason Fried, Fried, who is the founder of Basecamp. And he's one of these guys that is really intentional about their entire staff. I mean, they've got 150 or so people on the team, and they give everybody on the team permission to create margin in their schedule.
Amazing.
And it's part of their culture. And the reason they get so much done is actually because they have so much margin.
Man, I love that. One of the things that I've noticed as I get older, for me in church world, when I was a youth pastor to when I was a senior pastor, that the years leading up to that, what I noticed was that when I was a youth pastor, and this can maybe apply for anybody, but I realized I had the best youth group in the nation on paper. Like, it was phenomenal. Like, ideas, innovative, creative, worked well, but I couldn't quite figure out how to get it from paper to actually culture, or to get the vision to execution. As you're dealing with leaders, what is it that you're running into, or what advice would you give them if they're saying, like, listen, we got great ideas, or with me, again, people that aren't just pastors are listening to this, but I had a I legitimately think I had the best youth group in the nation on paper.
Right.
I just couldn't figure out how to get it off of paper into reality. Are you running into that? What is it that stops us from getting that vision to the executing that vision?
Well, I think a lot of it is simply just willpower and sweat equity and execution. Meaning this, most people at their core, humans in general, are not wired, they're not hardwired automatically to go and actually implement. We would much rather concept it.
Mm.
We'd much rather ideate and brainstorm. I mean, that's fun, and it also is way easier.
Yeah.
The hard thing is always, are you a finisher? Like, can you make things happen? Can you execute? And I hear a lot of people, they'll use, you know, now the Enneagram and other skills or talent-based assessments. They'll say, well, you know, I'm not really somebody who gets things done. You know, I'm much more of the conceptor. I'm the vision.
That's amazing.
I'm the vision articulator. And my response is, even with organizations I help and work with, is, well, that's no excuse anymore. Like, everybody on the team has to now be willing to get their hands dirty and actually take things across the finish line. And so, and people will say, well, how do I do that? I'm not wired that way. Well, get wired that way.
Yeah.
It's just hard work. Like, that's what it is. I mean, it's the dirty, in the ditch, digging the ditch part of leadership, which there are certain times when the point leader has to go and sit in their office or go to that meeting or hang out with the elders or be in the board meeting or go hang out with they in quotations. But at the end of the day too, you also have to be one that's willing to say, all right, we got a great plan. Now let's go make it happen. And that's true for all of us, because I guarantee you everybody listening right now, they will think, oh, well, Brett or Jim or Susie on our team, they're the ones who get things done. They might be hardwired for that, but you have to be equally as committed to it.
Yeah. It's amazing to me. People are like, I don't really do administration. Like, that's not my thing. And I'm like, what do you think leadership is? Like, exactly. What do you think? Leadership is organizing and administrating things. I don't like, we have an idea that leadership is just throwing out a bunch of ideas and then somebody somewhere is going to carry that out, is going to organize it. Literally, people are like, I don't really do administration. You don't do leadership then.
I mean, the beauty of ministry world is that you have many of us have the army of volunteers.
Yeah.
That is a game changer.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden then you have to create an environment of volunteers that will then go implement.
Yes.
And what happens in many times with volunteers is that they get a tendency to say, well, I'm going to wait on somebody to tell me. I'm going to sit back and, you know, until somebody gives me orders, I won't move forward. Compared to a culture that says everybody moves forward. Like, we have a culture of making it happen.
Yeah.
And I would much rather have that. And that comes from the point leader, because the point leader has to actually model that. Like, the point leader has to be the one who says, I'm willing to not just talk about that we make things happen, but I'm willing to be the one that is actually demonstrating it.
Expand on that a little bit, because I think that so much of leadership, so much of what you're talking about, what you help people with, is culture. Like, how do we build culture here? What's the culture of our team? What's the culture of our environment, organization, whatever it may be? How do people build culture, and how do they become intentional about that? I'm around a lot of leaders and I'm like, man, I love your passion. I love your heart. You just don't feel intentional about things. And it's not necessarily like you're winging everything or it's mom and pop, but you're just not intentional. Can you talk to leaders about how do we intentionally build culture, and how do we make sure that we have intentionality in what we're doing?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it's language. A lot of it's shared language. there's some great disconnects in the college football space. I'm a huge college football fan. Anybody who's a University of Georgia fan, football fan, you don't say, if you're a University of Georgia football fan, you don't say go Bulldogs. You say go Dogs. There's language within the University of Georgia football team. I'm an Oklahoma Sooners fan. We don't say Sooner Boomer. We say Boomer Sooner.
Right.
We don't say red and white. We say crimson and cream. Like, there's language that proves that, like, people like us do things like this.
Yeah.
So I think great cultures have almost, they're just short of being cult-like and cultish in their language.
Right.
You know, if you walk into a Walmart, and at a team meeting at Walmart headquarters, or you walk into Chick-fil-A, or you walk into Southwest Airlines, there's language, there's style that is very clear, that it comes from people who look around and go, people like us do things like this. And man, if you have a just short of cult-like atmosphere of language, of the way you do things, the way you operate, you know, like over the years at Catalyst, we felt like we had a style, we had a smell.
Yeah.
We had a smell. Like, we had a smell that was very Catalyst-like. We had language that was very Catalyst. We had, well, all those things contribute to culture. So the more acute your culture is, the better culture probably you have.
Yeah. How do people come from the outside of the culture and come in? So if I'm hiring somebody that maybe doesn't have my culture, what's the best way to integrate them in? Just time?
Well, it's both. It's the things that are caught,
yeah,
by just being around people, and it's the things that we then teach, which are more of the things that probably are on paper, meaning, sure, that you have a clear sense of core values, you have a clear mission, vision, you have a clear strategy that's in place. You have some things that, you know, your operating principles. Both of those have to be part of the fabric and of the equation of onboarding somebody and actually letting them quickly get a sense of what it means to work here. And at the end of the day, culture is things that are tangible, but a lot of times culture ultimately is, this is how we operate around here. Like this is what we tolerate. This is what we don't tolerate.
Right.
And as soon as you walk into a culture that's strong, most people self-select themselves out.
Yeah.
Compared to they are able to hide from within.
Sure.
If that makes sense. Uh-huh. So great cultures, people don't stay around who don't fit because they just go, oh my gosh, like these people are annoying or this is definitely not me. You get like propelled or like launched out of a culture that you don't fit in. That's a great culture, usually a healthy culture, really fast.
Yeah.
If you don't fit. And the vice versa is true. If you're a great fit, you know immediately.
Yeah.
And everybody is like, oh, this person is the carrier. I mean, they got the bacteria all over them.
Sure.
Of that culture.
You go in, you're a consultant, you go in, you help leaders, you help organizations, you're in small groups of people, helping them influence thousands. As you come in from the outside, we all are pretty kind of, for the most part, married to our ideas, married to how we do things, committed. Both as as organizations and then as leaders, what is it that you would say people have the hardest time hearing from you or are most resistant to? So is there a common theme you've seen when you come in and are trying to help? And they brought you in. I mean, these are people that have brought you in. They're paying you. They're hungry for it. But they still somehow have a hard time hearing you give this input or are resistant to you trying to change this. Is there anything that pops out that's been kind of common theme with leaders?
Well, most leaders don't want to hear that they have to change.
Mm.
They want to hear that other people need to.
Oh, there we go. So the top guy wants it. Yeah, I got you. Keep going.
Yes. And that doesn't mean necessarily even the top guy. That's department heads. It's managers. It's the youth pastor. It goes all the way down the chain, you know, up and down the chain. People naturally, in general, they want to hear that the people around them,
that's fascinating,
are the issue.
Yes.
And that's both good and bad leaders. That's just human nature. So the commonality there is that people don't like to change, you know, even when they realize that they need to or they realize they have to. Change is just really difficult. And I will say this, if ultimately you can show the benefit to a person, to the leader or the team or the board or whoever the customer is, if you can show benefit to them of if they are willing to do this, this will be the result, then people buy into it. The hard thing about change is when you don't know why you're doing it or you can't see what the end result will be and you don't know what destination you're going to end up in, that's when it's really difficult.
How are we, you're talking about, I love this. I want to go here for a little bit because as a leader, again, whether I'm the top dog or whether I'm just the head of a group, I'm bringing you in because I think our environment needs to change and I kind of think that rests on people that need to change. And then you come in, you're like, well, I have to change. How do we become more self-aware as leaders? Like, how do we become more self-aware that, and maybe it's both, they need to change and I need to change, but how do we become more self-aware as leaders to go like, wow, if I really want this to change around here, I have to change. We went through a really tough time in 2012 and ministry-wise and all that, and so I just took a month off. I was just needing to go home and get some rest, and then one of our staff members, Zach, he stepped up and was helping lead staff, and my wife stepped in. And I remember coming back, and something I had worked so hard at the whole time at staff, just to get people sharing and connecting, and was happening. And I just realized, I'm like, I was gone for a month. They right. stepped up, and it was happening now. And I just realized, I'm like, wait, am I the problem? Wait a second. Am I the lid in all of this? What is going on? It was so eye-opening. How do people become more aware as leaders of their own constraints or their own lid or how they're impacting the environment?
Well, they've got to ask. And, you know, that's always the hardest. Because every leader I know and you know, when you say, hey, who really has permission? who has permission to speak into your life? And they will give you this long list. And then you go talk to those people.
Yeah.
You're like, I can't say anything to them.
Yeah.
First of all, they pay me.
Yeah.
Second, the last time I said something, they totally denied it and they went off.
Yes.
And then from then on, the only feedback they give is the feedback that that leader wants.
Wow.
Not that feedback that that leader needs. And so, like, the answer to your question is you have to be the one that builds the bridge of self-awareness.
Wow.
That is your responsibility 100%. Most of the time, what happens is that somebody else then forces that upon us because of some issue or performance or moral failure or whatever happens, then whoever your boss is, whoever our bosses are, they step in and go, okay, it's time for you to get self-aware. But our reality and our responsibility as leaders is to do it way before we need to. So permission needs to be given to as many people as possible.
Mm.
And here's the thing, Banning, we both know this because we've led. Like, when I say it the first time, that person, like, for example, anybody who's a direct report, if you walk in and you say, hey, listen, I need to work on my self-awareness, I'm giving you permission to speak truth into me. They will look at you and you'll say, okay, so speak truth, speak truth. And they'll say, oh, you're amazing. Like, you're the best leader ever.
Yes.
Never worked for a better leader.
Yes.
And then most of us walk away and go, see, I'm self-aware. What the real key is, though, is like second time, third time, fourth time, fifth time, sixth time. And finally,
at some point,
that direct report will bring the list. And they're like, okay, here's all the things that you annoy me with. Here's the things that you're dysfunctional on.
Yeah.
Can I speak some truth into you? And you're like, where did that come from? And it's because you gave them permission.
Yeah.
Finally, to the point where they realized, I trust you enough that I know you're not going to fire me, or you're not going to like put me into the corner, or you're going to like
defend and diminish, dismiss, defend, diminish. Yeah, totally.
You have to be somebody who constantly seeks it out as a leader. And it doesn't make you weak. That's what we think. We think if I'm self-aware and I let people in and they see vulnerabilities, I'm going to be a weak leader.
Yeah.
No, you're actually going to be way stronger, and they're going to actually trust you and respect you even more.
That's fascinating, because the higher up you go, the less feedback you get. It's just reality, because like you said, people.
Well, the less good feedback you get.
Less good feedback. Yeah. Yeah.
You get feedback all the time. It's just not the feedback you need. It's only the feedback that feeds your soul of like starving ego.
Yeah. Yeah. I think how you receive it matters too, because this is my own my marriage has helped me a ton with this, because my wife is not an argue fighter. So, you know, she might come in our marriage and like, hey, this is what's going on. And I'll just I'll just go in, let's argue this point out. Let's put it on the table. Let's wrestle it. And it's just not her. Like, I remember one time my sister was over, and my sister's a couple years older than me, and we were talking through something. And that night, my CJ goes, hey, how you doing? You doing okay? I'm like, yeah, why? She goes, I'm really sorry what happened with your sister and you today. I'm like, what happened with us? What are you talking about? She goes, you guys got in that fight today. And I was like, I didn't even know what she's talking about. I'm like, fight, fight. Oh, you're talking about that conversation? She's like, was that not a fight? I'm like, no. But what I realized was that how I received, that not everybody is geared like me and my sister.
Yep.
Like, and so for my wife to come and give me feedback, it's like she's having to her personality is, it feels like she's having to come loaded for bear. She's really got, it's a lot of work to do that for her, because she just doesn't want to argue or fight. And also when she thinks she's yelling at a 10, it's really a 3. So then it's harder to hear sometimes. I'm like, wait, did you give me feedback? I could barely hear you. You were whispering. And so somehow as leaders, it could just be my personality, but going and asking those questions, but also like really being able to have to go like, okay, I can't argue this point. I can't like defend it. I've just got to listen. I've got to, it's a skill set in and of itself, isn't it? To be able to receive feedback.
It is. And it's so much more helpful today more than ever that we have all these personality assessments available to us. So my advice always is, listen, as a leader, you have to know yourself, and there's great actually like assessments that can help you with that. But it also is really helpful to know your team and the people around you and your spouse and your family and your friends. Like, the more you know and the way they're wired, the more you're able to navigate those pieces like you're talking about, and the way you approach conversations, or the way you look at a conversation that you walk away and go, that was nothing. And that person walks away and goes, oh, my life is over.
Yeah.
Because Banning just said something that has ruined my life.
Yes.
And you're like, I thought that was just good feedback.
Yeah.
And they took it as this massive like bomb on their emotions.
Yeah.
That they were going to spend the next 2 weeks mulling over.
Yeah. Nah, so good. The latest book you wrote is H3 Leadership.
It is. I have one that was due like a year and a half ago that I hadn't even started on. So yeah. Yes,
the well, answer to your question I'll join that club. You wrote a book called H3 Leadership: Be Humble, Stay Hungry, Always Hustle. Before we let you go, I'd love just to hear quickly, can you give us an overview of H3 Leadership and what your goal is for people that are reading that book?
Well, it's the three legs, I would say, of the stool of leadership: humble, hungry, and hustle. And you know, humble is, it's not about you. Hungry is you never stop learning, and hustle is it's going to take some hard work to get there. And if you have those three legs in balance, I think your leadership's going to look, it's going to look effective. You know, a lot of people I know are really humble and they don't do anything. And then I know a lot of people who it's all about them. Everything is self-serving, you know, so those have to be in balance. And I think for me anyway, when the young leaders for years and years now, since I'm older, when young leaders ask me, you know, Brad, what does leadership boil down to? I would always say, be humble, stay hungry, always hustle.
Mm.
That's my theory. And
yeah.
So this really is my, you know, it's my book that is the theory of leadership for me that
I love it.
Hopefully lasts me for, you know, another 30 or 40 years.
Yeah. H3 Leadership, you can get it anywhere online. How do people connect with you? Social media, website, where do they go?
Just my first and last name.com. And I'm not really on social media much anymore. So if you follow me, I'm a lousy follow because I don't post much.
I feel the same way. And I feel the same way about mine. I just told CJ the other day, I said, I'm horrible at social media. I know. I know.
I don't really want to post anymore. I just want to watch people and follow them.
I know. Partly for me is I'm like, I'm in this moment. I don't want to stop and figure out how do I capture this moment and what do I do?
But the one for me, Banning, that because I'm a golf fan and being at all these golf events before and golf tournaments, now watching everybody, nobody claps anymore. They just have their phone out.
Yeah.
I'm like, can we not just take the moment in?
Yes, I know.
We clap for Tiger when he wins and not just like try to take a photo.
We're going to have a whole nother episode, me and you, just on social media.
Well, we could unpack it.
Yeah,
I think we could help a lot of people.
I do.
Or maybe we'll just make ourselves feel better.
Yeah, maybe just either way. Us old guys. We're like those old guys.
Exactly.
Back in my day, we just used to enjoy the moment.
Yeah, we've become those guys that we used to make fun of.
We're those guys. Brad, thank you so much for joining us. Always a joy to talk to you. And we appreciate all that you're doing in leadership. And thanks for just pouring into the podcasters.
We hope you enjoyed this show, part of the Jesus Culture Podcast Network. You can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And for more information, go to jesusculture.com/podcast. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @JC Podcast.